Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so today I want to be talking about the core reason for education, why we want creative classrooms. And the big idea I want to talk about is this notion that the goal of education isn't simply a better job or making more money. It's much deeper than that. And although those things matter, we want students to find the dream jobs of their future, there's so much more at stake. And I mention this because I spent last week in Hong Kong. And before I went to Hong Kong, people would ask me, what about the protests? And I almost always answered with, well, I hear that you can avoid the protests. That's what I saw on the travel blogs. That's what I saw in the news. That's what the organization that I worked with had told me. And that statement is absolutely true. The beauty of living in a pluralistic democracy is the freedom to avoid political stuff if you want. You get that freedom to be distracted, to go see tourist things and to go visit places and to watch your favorite TV shows and whatnot. But the reality is, I didn't see the protests, not at first. In fact, the very first day I was there, I just felt like I don't even see what's going on. You could spend a whole week there if you wanted to, and everything would feel, well, normal. You would feel like you're in a democracy. And yet the protests were all around in subtle ways. On Monday, members of an apartment complex across from my hotel hung a banner that read, "Free speech, free Hong Kong," in bold letters. As I walked through the streets, I noticed a number of residents wearing American flags or Houston Rockets jersey, which were a nod to the fact that China had banned the Houston Rockets because one of their executives had tweeted in support of the Hong Kong protests. I noticed yellow ribbons tied on street poles to signify solidarity with the Occupy Hong Kong movement. And at one point, halfway through the week, as we were eating dinner, both of the people I was with just stopped eating and stopped talking. "Can you believe they're playing that?" one woman said. "You mean the song from Les Mis?" I asked. "It's become a bit of a protest song," she explained. And she's right. Suddenly I noticed it everywhere. That song, "Do You Hear the People Sing?" I heard it at a bar, and at a bodega, and at a coffee shop. It was all around. There's a stirring example of students at a high school singing that song at the start of the school year over the Chinese national anthem. Again, these protests were subtle, but pervasive, and you would notice them if you were paying attention. Before visiting Hong Kong, people asked me about it, and I would answer, well, it's complicated, and I honestly don't know about this movement. I don't have enough information to really solidify an opinion. And this answer came from a place of recognizing my own bias and a desire to step aside and listen before I formed my opinion. The truth is that it is complicated and messy and nuanced. I met people who supported democracy and believed in the movement, but did not endorse the violence of some of the protesters. Others said little about protesters and instead criticized the police for provoking them. And certain teachers told me that they were concerned about raising their kids in a Hong Kong where future freedom was uncertain, and the 50 years of two different systems would evaporate. They were concerned that Hong Kong and China were connected through commerce and industry, and they knew that they needed that commerce and industry to have a prosperous life. This wasn't a matter of two sides or two perspectives. It was an issue of multiple perspectives and nuanced opinions. But nuance can't be an excuse for complacency. It's complicated, can't be code for let's just ignore it. I've listened to countless teachers talk about the slow evaporation of personal liberty. I've spent a week hearing people talk about due process, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. The reality might be nuanced, yes, but there's also a sense of moral clarity. There's no such thing as both sides here. Freedom is right. Authoritarianism is wrong. That's true in Hong Kong. That's true in Chile. That's true in Europe. That's true in America. We need to admit that. And it's been heartbreaking to hear these stories. I've heard from teachers who work at Christian schools who are legitimately concerned that Beijing will crack down on their churches and their freedom to practice their faith. I met a former mainland China teacher whose parents were imprisoned in the 1980s for running an underground church. And now this particular teacher is teaching in Hong Kong. But I also met members of the LGBTQ community who were worried about a Beijing crackdown on their rights. These teachers are socially progressive and truly have very little in common politically with the previous teachers I mentioned at the Christian schools. Except that they do. We all do. There is a human universal desire for freedom, spiritual explorations. On Friday, a group of teachers were talking about the protests and the challenges that these protests posed to students who either supported the protests or who were a little more pro-Beijing. The conversation was intelligent, it was nuanced, with the discussion of supporting the ideas of democracy while disagreeing on the violence from both the protesters and the police. They talked openly about the challenges of running a school in the midst of this social turmoil. But then after the conversation, I talked privately with a teacher who said people just want to go about with their lives, and the protests are disruptive. The protests are really inconvenient, but democracy is inconvenient. Freedom is inconvenient, and that stuck with me. We have to embrace the inconvenience. We have to embrace the discomfort of democracy. And it got me thinking about the greater goal of education. See, I believe, like I said earlier, that schools should be bastions of creativity and wonder. I want to see students make and design and problem solve. I want to see students learn how to curate information. I want to see them connect and collaborate with others. These are often called 21st century skills. And we talk about the need for them in the creative economy. I've even described how they'll need these skills as we shift from that corporate ladder to a maze. But ultimately, the goal of education can never simply be attaining a better job. The maze isn't simply a search for a better career. It's also about building a better world. At its core, education should be about developing critical thinking citizens who will contribute to a democratic society. Collaboration is necessary for careers, but it's a critical idea for building a better future as a society. Yes, information literacy will help students improve their analytical skills in analytical jobs, but it will also help them determine the accuracy and context of news stories so that they can be better informed citizens. It's true that empathy is important for design. It's a critical part of design thinking. But empathy is also vital for community connections and the future of democracy. I want students to be critical thinkers and problem solvers, but I also want them to solve the big social and global and political problems that they will face. I want students to make stuff, but I also want them to make a difference. I'm not referring here to indoctrination. My goal is not to see students become progressive like me or conservative like others. I'm not looking for social activists who agree with everything I have to say, but what I'm asking for is that we help them develop the ability to engage in democratic dialogue and to see their role and responsibility to the greater society. So what does that actually mean? Well, here are a few ideas. In math, it's the idea that math is not socially neutral, but is instead deeply rooted in our lived experiences. Help students develop statistical understanding and make sense out of how math is manipulated with bias. In other words, encourage them to seek out examples of bad graphs that are deliberately used as propaganda, and trust me, they are all over the place. Help them think critically about research and statistics. Integrate mathematical reasoning into things like service learning projects so that they see that math matters in their world. I mention this because I see so many people who lack statistical understanding. And honestly, this is my own bias here. I think stats is more important than algebra 2. I really want people to understand how statistics work on a deep and profound level. For language arts, it's the idea of helping them deconstruct the social and political realities of the novels that they read. Have them engage in Socratic seminars, not simply as a way to deconstruct a text, but as a way to engage in horizontal democratic dialogue. Teach them about information literacy and media literacy, and help them find ways to break past their filter bubbles of social media. Expose them to ideas from multiple viewpoints. Our standards are essentially content neutral and topic neutral, which means we have the opportunity to expose them to all kinds of text that will provoke critical thinking. Create a citizen journalism unit where students create blogs and documentaries and podcasts that capture the stories of their world. In social studies, model democracy through simulations and debates and mock trials. Help history come alive in a way that expresses multiple viewpoints and narrative strands. And more important, start social studies earlier. Often this subject is minimalized and put into basically a couple special holiday units at the primary level. And I think that's too bad. The incessant pressure of standardized tests has minimized the role of social studies, and we end up with students who are politically and civically and historically illiterate, and we need to start social studies earlier. For science, help them learn scientific literacy. Encourage them to make connections between scientific concepts and lived realities. For example, climate change might feel distant and abstract, but I met a teacher here in Salem, Oregon, where I live, who had students explore why we went an entire summer with no drinking water. By making sense out of the toxic algae and reviewing the data of earlier ice pack melt, they discovered that climate change impacted their lives. Note that they weren't being explicitly political here. Some of the students saw free market solutions as the ultimate answer, and that was a very conservative perspective. Others wanted government intervention. But the most important thing is that they were actually well-informed on science and science policy. In the arts, help students see the role of the arts in social movements. Allow them to see how expressing one's voice can impact the rest of the world. I would never have guessed that a song from musical theater in the 1980s would become a protest anthem in Hong Kong. And by the way, if you go to the blog post on this, there's a version of Do You Hear the People Sing that is heart-wrenching and beautiful. But it's a small example of the way art reflects and spurs social change. Not necessarily for the purpose of propaganda, but for the ability to express one's voice. and health, incorporate ideas of civic engagement into lessons about personal decisions and goal setting and whatnot. Instead of doing a career exploration unit and just talking about what do you want to be when you grow up, ask, who do you want to be when you grow up? And what do you want to change when you grow up? And what problems in our society are you going to help solve when you grow up? In foreign language, include elements of cross-cultural dialogue and exploration of the social and political realities of these contexts. In technology classes, help students think critically about technology and big data. Allow them to see how Apple essentially caved and deleted a Hong Kong protest app in order to appease an authoritarian regime in China. Now, I get it. This is not an exhaustive list. In fact, I would encourage you to leave a comment on the bottom of this corresponding blog post sharing how you see democracy in action in the classroom. But the bottom line is this: ultimately, we as educators can play a critical role in our approach to classroom culture and instruction and assessment. When we allow students to help set the norms and the rules and the procedures, we model democracy for our students. When we empower them with voice and choice, we reinforce the values of personal liberty and free speech. And when we integrate democracy into our curriculum, we help develop the future of democracy in our own society. So thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast? Again, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.